on St. Patrick's Day, and no, I don't wear green, but anyway, a few announcements, chapter announcements, before we introduce ourselves. First of all, I am chair of the membership committee, and I'd like to say thank you to all the sponsors and co-sponsors who submitted names of nominees. We got a huge, wonderful list of nominees, which we are currently vetting, and we will make our recommendations to the board, and then you'll have a chance to comment on those and to vote on them. But it's a great class, and I know it takes some effort to get the nominations in, so thank you to everybody. And just a reminder that the initiation banquet is set for the Peninsula Hotel on Wednesday night, June 16th. So we hope we'll have another one of those perfect summer evenings on the patio of the Peninsula Hotel. And now Jackie Lowy's going to tell you a little bit about the upcoming Chautauqua that's planned, and there should be an announcement on all of your chairs.
Hi, I'm Jackie Lowy. I'm the Vice President of the Chautauqua events for this year for the Lambda Alpha Board. And in case you didn't miss this bright yellow piece of paper sitting on your chair, this describes in detail our upcoming program in April. I wanted to be sure, and it's been a while since we've had a Chautauqua, because we were all Burnham all last year, and we're back to doing our Chautauqua programs, which we're very excited about. And this first one is going to be in the spring about privatization and P3. So we hope as members you'll all come and invite guests. I think it'll be a spirited conversation about where things are going privatization-wise. And for those of you who are curious about what a Chautauqua actually is, we've supplied a definition at the bottom of this yellow page. So we look forward to seeing everybody on April 21st. I do want to remind everybody, we're doing a little experiment. We're doing a breakfast this time. So it's been a while, if ever, that we've done a breakfast for the Chautauqua. So we're going to test that out, and hopefully you guys will get up early and join us. And we're also doing it at Maggiano's as opposed to Pettorino's. So please make sure you don't come to Pettorino's on the 21st and you go to Maggiano's for the breakfast. So thank you very much.
I'm Alan Jaffe. I am the Vice President of Programming this year. We're going to get started with our program. Before we start with Larry, and actually a good friend of Larry's, Lynn Caldera, who's also a board member, is going to introduce Larry today. But save the date for May 18th. That'll be our next luncheon. We are working on a very special guest. We're going to have an international renowned speaker, if we can work out the logistics, as our presenter and featured speaker for May 18th. More details to follow. Can't say anything more yet, but keep that date. And with that, I'm going to introduce Lynn. Thank you.
Well, thank you all very much. I'm really very excited to have a chance to introduce Larry. We've been friends for about 33 years, so we're probably the best advertisements for starting a career straight out of kindergarten. It really helps. I'm also very pleased that we were able to schedule Larry on St. Patrick's Day, a day so important to his family's heritage. When did you drop the apostrophe in Oakland? Just this morning, right? Sir. Most of you didn't recognize that he was Irish. Now, some of us may remember that Larry is in fact a member of this organization. I think you reminded me that we were members of the first, we were the same initiation class. Buddy's missed a meeting or two, so we're glad to have him here to speak to us today. What many of you may know is that Larry is one of our foremost planning and zoning experts in the Chicago area. And after receiving degrees from Michigan and Northwestern a few decades earlier, Larry founded his own firm in 1980. His list of accomplishments is lengthy, and the projects he has worked on are even longer. He's been involved with several. The first one is one near and dear to my heart. I helped him with it, Louis Armstrong Airport in New Orleans, but also USX Southworks in Chicago, Mohammed bin Zayed City in Abu Dhabi, if I didn't hammer that, the Field Museum, the MCA, Adler Planetarium, Shedd Aquarium, UIC, Columbus Hospital, 640 Lakeshore Drives, the CTA, ComEd, DePaul, CBS, and countless others. We're glad to have him here, Larry.
Glad to be among, I'm happy to be among friends, and I hope the friendship survives the next half hour. This presentation originated with work I was doing in 08 on behalf of the Children's Museum. All sorts of Grant Park issues came up. And we had a hearing at the Planning Commission, I think it was in May of 08, and after that I was approached by the Grant Park Conservancy, and they asked me to rejigger it a bit to make it about Grant Park per se, so I did that. I think it's a very interesting subject, and I don't have any way of changing the slide where I'm standing.
Well, here, it's because you left it in your chair.
I don't know how to work this.
Oh.
Let's try that. Okay. Actually,
you did it. It worked out.
Oh, it did. Okay. Are you going to be okay? So, will we use a hand signal or something? This is an aerial photograph of Grant Park from 07. Shows pretty much the current condition of the park, although a lot of construction has happened on the perimeter even since then. There's a large tower at the south end. The aqua doesn't appear in this picture, point being that everything's in a constant state of change. The story begins in 1839. This is the Fort Dearborn plat. This was a document prepared by the War Department under President Van Buren, and this plat was, and the ownership of the land described was conveyed to the city by the War Department in 1839. The blue tinted area is the site of Fort Dearborn. Notice that Lake Michigan shoreline was just barely east of Michigan Avenue. The next slide focuses on this block, which was identified in this 1839 document as public ground forever to remain vacant of buildings. North is to the left here. This is Randolph and Michigan. And it did become a public space, Dearborn Park. It's an 1871 photograph. The shoreline had moved substantially to the east by then, mostly to be filled with the classification yards of the Illinois Central Railroad. Point out this building because it will give you orientation in regards to another picture. In any case, notwithstanding the restriction on development, the Cultural Center was built in 1893, and this was accomplished through consent of the surrounding property owners. It was the same device that was used to secure approval for the Art Institute, same year, in fact, 1893. This picture is around the vicinity of Van Buren. And here's the building I pointed out at Dearborn Park. You notice the classification yards extend well out into the lake. The grain elevators received grain shipped by rail from the prairie was brought here and put on lake vessels. The elevators, the Buckingham family of Fountain fame were among the owners of the elevators. Notice the shoreline just east of Michigan Avenue. The railroad was on a trestle at that time. Approximately the same location of the open cut today. The fire of 1871 destroyed everything, and for a brief period there were buildings constructed on the east side of Michigan Avenue. You still see the offshore trestle here. As a way of rebuilding confidence in the city and letting the world know we were open for business, the Interstate Industrial Exhibition Building was constructed on the site of what would later become the Art Institute. Only 18 years. One of the historic events that occurred here was the Republican Convention of 1880, where Garfield was nominated for president. This picture is from the there's a very familiar picture. I'm sure you've all seen it. It's from the tower of the Auditorium Theater Building. Interstate Industrial Exhibition, railroad land. But in this picture, we see that the land between Michigan Avenue and the rail line is now filled in. Substantial proportion of that fill was from the rubble from the fire when the city was cleared for reconstruction. 1892, bird's eye. You got to be careful in using these things as historical resources, but you can see here there is a depiction of a landscape garden. I'm not sure that actually existed at that time because Montgomery Ward was making a fuss about garbage and shacks in 1890. He even proposed to pay for the construction of a park himself and was turned down. The other interesting thing about this image is the ball field here. It was actually the first home of the Chicago White Stockings, who were the ancestors of the Cubs. Here's the Masonic Temple, the tallest building of its era, where the Joffrey Ballet now stands. Montgomery Ward is the hero of Grant Park. He was involved in four lawsuits. The first one in 1890 sued to compel the city to remove garbage and various buildings. I actually have a quote. This is a great book. Lois Willie's book, Forever of the Free and Clear. It's available in paperback, but there's a great quote in there. You know, when he made a big fuss about buildings and garbage in the park, the city council was furious and baffled at Ward's open space concept. A downtown lakefront is no place for a park, complained Alderman William Ballard. It should be used to bring revenue to the city. The second Montgomery lawsuit made the same point with regard to park expansion. The land created after the first decision was also exempt from construction as a result of his second suit. We'll get to the other two later on. Next one. About 1908, this is all raw fill. This is the Randolph Street Viaduct. Heavy industrial railroad use throughout the area. No park-like improvements. I had to do some research on the source of the fill for the extension east of the tracks. I still haven't pinned it down, but Lois Willie says it was from the Chicago Sanitary Canal, which makes the dating a little bit of an issue. I've also heard it was a freight tunnel system. Some of it was dredging for the construction of Chicago Harbor, so that's where all it came from. And once it was there, and nothing happened to it. In the right way, that is. And if you look north from the rail yard towards the river, this was the view you saw. Now Randolph, of course, is the north boundary of the park, but the park as we know it didn't extend north of Monroe until very recently. This is taken out of a book. It shows the progression of the landfill east of the rail cut, which continued until about 1907. Hard to date some of these postcard images, but you can see there's some sort of public ground here, although seriously lacking in the familiar park amenities. It was an air show. I don't think we'll be seeing something like that anytime soon. The formal order of the park was the design of the Burnham brothers, and Ted, if I'm wrong, say so. But it was imagined as a very formal sort of garden with very strict geometry. This is a Congress Plaza, but this is a postcard image from the 20s. Most of this wasn't built till sometime after that. So from about 1910 till almost 1930, there really wasn't much park. This 1929 view shows that the central panel essentially is completed. Development still going on west of Columbus. Here's the Art Institute. And north of Monroe, basically an industrial wasteland. One of the charming things about this image is there was an ancestor of Lakeshore Drive. I don't recall offhand what it was named, but in those days you could just pull off, park, and stick your toes in the water. And there were no... what do they call those boxes you have to put money into? The zero-armed band. 1929, you can see that Monroe was the northern limit of park, which wasn't all that nice, and the shoreline was unimproved. And more significantly, if you wanted to cross the river, it was necessary to go back to Michigan Avenue because the Lakeshore Drive Bridge came in the 30s. This is the peristyle as it was in 1929. It was there, and of course, it's been restored as part of Millennium Park, the McCormick something peristyle. In 1937, not much more progress on the development of the park north of Monroe, but the Lakeshore Drive Bridge is under construction here with the notorious S-curve remembered with great warm feelings by everyone with gray hair. That was actually fixed in 1986. Seems like yesterday.
Yeah.
1949, Bombardier's View, large open parking lot. The railroad activity is starting to wind down. There are coal piles along the river here. Some warehousing still going on, and of course, the S-turn. Some of you will remember that not only was it an unusual drive, but it was on an elevated roadway over the rail yards. And this is a large electric Motorola billboard that was there until at least the 60s. And just appalling to imagine that something like that would have been regarded as acceptable at any time in our history, let alone within our lifetime. 1948, this is the old Naval Armory, since demolished, the Yacht Club. We see some park use along Michigan Avenue. Randolph is now improved across to Lakeshore Drive. And a section of the Lakeshore here between Monroe and Jackson is now a publicly accessible park space. 1963 brought the Outer Drive East Apartments, which was an extremely bold project for the era, because look at the neighborhood this was built in. You could offer a lake view, but you're sitting in the middle of a, well, you can see. Very groundbreaking project. 1973, I started working at SOM in 1970, and it was possible to park in this lot for $3 a day. Oh, sounds like such a bargain. My salary was $9,200. Here you see the construction of Harbor Point. East of Lakeshore East. Okay. You can still see rail operations were active in that area then. And if you look at the same direction today, you have a completely different sort of image. Much nicer, obviously. In 1976, Daily Bicentennial Plaza was completed. It basically is two levels of structured parking with a green roof. It only pretends to be underground. You know, as you go up Randolph, the level of Randolph engages, or just above the park. It's about 21 acres. It's probably the first green roof project I know of. Here, the landscaping was still relatively new. Next one. And Daily By was also sort of remote, some distance from Michigan Avenue, and if the neighbors and the high-rises here wanted to go there, they would have to navigate 8 lanes of Lakeshore Drive traffic and Randolph, so it wasn't extremely convenient. Here we also see the construction of today's configuration. This actually added 14 acres of new park space to the area north of Monroe. And this picture is already dated, but you can see that the world in this area has changed. This is an amazing juxtaposition because 1999 wasn't that long ago. For Lennon, maybe it was like yesterday. Go to the next one. So 7 years later, we have this. And when you go to Millennium Park today, or visitors, no one can believe it's only been there for 5 years. Thoroughly amazing transformation, and Gene Sinard will tell you what an impact it's had on surrounding property values. This was the last segment of visible rail activity north of Jackson, or no, or north of Monroe. It is now enclosed in an man-made tunnel. This is an interlude. I stopped talking for 35 seconds. Hit the next button, it'll run automatically if it works right. This is the construction of Millennium Park as seen from my office building at 310 South Michigan during the 7-year construction period. Whenever there was an extra frame left in the camera, I went up on the roof and got a picture. One of the things that will occur towards the end is the heritage will start popping up over here. But don't be distracted by that. Watch the show. I'll point it out when it starts. Of course, there's a lot of... Oh, I said I wouldn't talk. There's a crane. Here it comes. Obviously, it's easier to build a high-rise than a park like this. But this actually, I have a picture of finished condition, but what happened was after the first opening of the park, the Kapoor sculpture needed to be filled and polished because there were seams in it. And so this tent was erected around it for that work. But then my building became condominiums and I had to leave, so. Now, the southern part of the park has its narrative too. Here you can see, again, the shoreline is dominated by railroads, even some fill in this area. This is the Illinois Central Station on Park Place. Roosevelt Road is the next block south. This is the statue of General Logan. He was a Civil War hero. Of course, that statue is still there. If you're looking at it towards the north, I think it's John Logan. And this is in 1968, during demonstrations related to the Democratic Convention that year. I was there as a journalist. Now, if you look south from the mound in this picture, you see the same buildings here that were in this older postcard view, including the IC station, which was torn down in 1974. I would say that given the current level of interest in preservation, probably wouldn't have slipped away quite so easily. But every architectural critic who's ever written about it, every architect who's ever commented about it, said it was just a bad building in every respect. Will Hasbrook, who's an expert in these matters, assures me that that's the general view and that it was not a loss. Actually, he worked at the IC, right, Charlie? Okay. So here we have the 1967. Grant Park had no southern boundary then. It just sort of just dissipated as you went south. And Roosevelt Road didn't cross the drive. And it had all these rail lines cutting the city off from what was to become the museum campus. It was very isolated out here at that time. Here's the old band shell. Nice postcard put through that. 1998, big changes. We have the Roosevelt Road Bridge. We have the museum campus with the relocation of all traffic lanes to the west of the complex. The former Park Place property is still raw and unimproved and will later become the site of the headless statues. A construction photograph from 1996, before the traffic was shifted west, and what it is today with traffic on the west and all sorts of new and significant investments. A couple of comments about planning. Since this was presented in 2009, we can still talk about Burnham. He had his ideas about Grant Park too. Everybody in the room knows the key dates and what he did. He was a contemporary of Marshall Field's, and it's important to remember that the 1909 plan was sponsored by the Commercial Club, and both Burnham and Field were members of the Commercial Club. I'm not privy to any information about whether they were close friends or not, but one imagines that there was enough contact there for one to have some influence on the other. Field he left a bequest in his will for a new field museum, which was, which he died in 1906, and he wanted it, and his backers wanted it to be in Grant Park. And this is 3 years before the publication of the plan. As an aside, Field died of something like pneumonia after playing golf in the snow with an orange golf ball, and Robert Todd Lincoln was in his foursome. But so Field's backers wanted the museum to be in Grant Park. Montgomery Ward said no. He went to court again. He stopped the project, but he even said that if everyone crossed their heart and hoped to die and never put any other buildings besides the museum there, he would go along with it. And they laughed him out of the room. And so he went to the Supreme Court, and he stopped the Field Museum, which, next one, didn't have any impact on its appearing in the 1909 plan. The Supreme Court decision saying no occurred in 1909, so there was a sort of chronological disconnect here. And this is what was proposed at that time. You're all familiar with this. Of course, I mentioned before that the IC station was not a great piece of architecture. And so the idea of replacing it was in play as early as the 20s. And this was, you know, one of the ideas that was pushed, the idea of another classical building next to the museum. Fortunately, not realized. Museum was built south of Roosevelt Road on land, riparian rights contributed to the museum by the Illinois Central. So it turns out the bequest had 18 million or some much larger number than originally thought. But one of the other conditions of the bequest was that the museum would have to be built by a date certain or the bequest would go away. So they beat the clock. This is an interesting plan. A central area plan of 1958 was done by the city. And let's see what it did with Grant Park. Interestingly, every plan we ever have that deals with the central area always has islands. We're sort of an island people now. One of them did get built, but that was the only one, northerly. But you can see here, and now this is 1958. This is the age of the 1957 zoning ordinance and expressway construction and excessive deference to the automobile. And the city foresaw a relocation of Lakeshore Drive along the rail line here with diamond interchanges of the cross streets. That was the thinking of 1958. Chicago 21 plan, I actually had a chance to work on that one. Here we see the northern part of the park, which at the time you'll recall was open parking, was to be a performance venue with a regional attraction. This is the model from the Chicago 21 plan. It also shows extensive residential development south of Congress and into the south side. And that was a very prescient idea because that's what we got. The 83 central area plan was looking for something to do with the IC station site and with the open cut at the north. There's the Performing Arts Center identified here and Lakefront Gardens here. And of course, these ideas came together in the creation of Millennium Park, the 83 plan. We also actually, in the Bruce Graham obituary, he incorrectly states that the museum campus came from the 73 Chicago 21 plan. Actually, it's from the 83 plan. You can see the road around here. Okay. This is about the growth of Grant Park. Again, when parks expand, people don't really pay attention to that stuff. You know, it happens, and we might notice it. But what's truly remarkable is that everything that's overlain in yellow here, only since 1975, something like 65 acres have been added to Grant Park in most of our lifetimes. That's quite radical and not widely known. Actually, this small one here came about as a result of the park district reducing the size of their service yard. This is new acreage from the realignment of Lakeshore Drive, Daly By, Millennium Park, former site of the train station. So 1998, we have Roosevelt Road, but the park has no physical definition at its south end. It used to just sort of drip into the south side. Now it sort of segues into the south side. It needed something at the south end to nail down its sense of place. And now we have that, mostly because of the development of this project.
Central Station.
Central Station. Next one. This is 1989, and Millennium Park is here. This is a truly remarkable juxtaposition. I was astonished when I discovered it in the collection. Take a look at this picture. Look at all the open land we had in 1989, and now in 07, think of the value of real estate that's been created in that short period. Oh, this is 07, I'm sorry. Blue Cross, get the next one. There we go. So it just keeps going, and I think you can see Aqua in here. Now, in regard to the Children's Museum, and I'm not here to talk about that, the issue became intense because residents of some of these buildings had a hard time assimilating it, and they basically led the opposition. So, you know, one of the problems with residential development in business areas is that you get neighbors with a stake, and they all want to be heard. And they should be. That just makes things a bit more interesting. So here's a 07 picture, and finally, we have a park with architectural definition on three sides, a beautiful lake in the front, and if that alderman from 19-whatever was around, he might appreciate it. But I think this is the last line. Yes. So. Not the black and white Bombardier views. All the nice ones.
I know you're not here to talk about the Children's Museum, but could you at least give us an update on what's going on?
Honestly, I have no idea what's going on now. I've been detached from it for more than a year. Paul Schagel?
Other questions? Nobody else?
Oh, I had one. You said that this is going to be on our website.
If Larry is so kind,
could you put this on our website? Please.
Have you done this sort of photo history of any other parts of the city, or just focus on your?
That question will sound like a plank when I give you the answer. Since 1986, I've accumulated 25,000 aerial photographs of the region, and I'm making it into a book. So far, I've got about 140 pages laid out, pictures for that entire era. I think the page count is around 240, maybe 280 pictures, and I have some more shooting to do this spring to tie things in, but. There's some very interesting juxtapositions in there, every bit as interesting as that Randolph picture, including Stearns Quarry Park and a number of PBC projects. And did you see the picture of, that I sent to Kevin of Westinghouse?
Yeah.
Susan? Go ahead.
Burnham Brothers, that's my understanding of that.
So Bennett, is, cited as being...
Well, I think, and maybe Ted Wolf knows the answer to this, but I think the Burnham Brothers, well, you should know. Burnham Brothers were the landscape architects. Bennett was the planner, the big concept guy. Someone had to decide what trees were going to be used, what the caliper would be, how they keep them alive, all that stuff. And I think that's basically what their role was. But there's also some design to be done when these specifications are set forth.
Any other?
Was there any development of the park under New Deal programs in the 30s?
Oh, I should have mentioned that. Most of what we saw, we see today was WPA funded. So a lot of it was done in the 30s, and I usually mention that, I just forgot to today, but that's correct.
Could you talk a little bit about the
talk about the last two board decisions, and what about the Trillo Van Shell and the temporary structure in that order?
The third ward case was when he sued to stop the construction of the Field Museum in the park. And he, as I said, he was willing to accept that museum without fussing because he was worn out. He didn't want to spend the rest of his life in these battles. But no, the South Park Commission, I think it was, were not willing to make a commitment that no other buildings would be constructed. And that case was decided in 1907 or something. But what happened then was the backers of the museum initiated the fourth suit. He was a defendant. It was sort of a condemnation trial which sought to strip him of his right to a view. And that one also failed, 1911, I think that's the thing. What was the other part of the question?
Petrillo Van Shell.
Well, there's many things about Grant Park which exist because of convenient winks and shrugs. I mean, Petrillo is there because it's declared to be temporary, but we don't remember when it wasn't there. In Lois Willie's book, she talks about the additions to the Art Institute on the east side of the tracks. I forgot the name of it. The two linear buildings. That would have required consent under an interpretation of that consent arrangement. The Art Institute backers say, well, we were allowed 400 feet of frontage on Michigan Avenue, but they don't front on Michigan Avenue. They front on Jackson and Monroe. And the same sort of contorted logic was used when the addition on Columbus was built. And interestingly, and this is something that connects to the Children's Museum again, because the Children's Museum, by the way, the way it finished, it's transforming built space in a garage from car storage to something else. That's really all it is. It doesn't go above the deck of the thing. It's just, but all that heavy breathing completely distorted the picture. What's interesting is that, as far as I know, no one said boo about the modern wing. And they will all say, well, it doesn't front on Michigan Avenue. Well, that worked in the past, and it worked this time, too. But I have an office on the 12th floor at the People's Gas Building. It sure affected my view. But there was no public participation in it. We all love the building, we all love the architecture, but no fuss. Well, hard to explain to people.
There are no other questions? Thank you very much, Larry. Great topic, great presentation. As a thank you.
Coffee.
Thanks, everybody.